So I get asked a lot, being in my 40s, how do I manage to continue to perform all season long at the level that I do? Well, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I have a lot of help. Triple Threat Performance has been putting this old body back together again for years. I keep tearing it down, and they keep putting me back together. And now, apart from the physical therapy side, I got involved in their athletic training program. And honestly, I don't think the Mountains stand a chance this season. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're interested in upping your game, check them out at www.ttpaz.com. That's ttpaz.com. Now let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters campfire session. Today we are going to be talking with a buddy of mine who just got back from being deployed overseas, and you know, he's had a little hiatus from hunting for a bit, but he's had quite the hunting career. That's Jared Blumgren. How you doing, man?
Hey, doing well. How you doing today, John?
I'm good. Good. Got up nice and early, 5 a.m., went to the gym for a couple hours, and now I'm kind of dragging ass a little bit, but other than that.
You know, I notice that as we get older, too, it's a little bit harder, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The downtime, the recovery time's way
right
longer.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like I should have to work as hard as I do anymore to make it possible, but.
Yeah.
Used to be all natural. Now I got to bust my ass to get it done. So
yeah. Yeah. It was a lot easier.
Back to life, I guess.
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes. The getting old thing sucks. It's I used to kind of like not really understand when they said that youth is wasted on the young. But now it's like I think about it and I'm like, man, if I could do it, like if I was like I used to be now, what I know now, this right. be crazy, deadly combination. But I guess that's the world's way of evening things out. You make up for what you lack in experience with your you know, your grit and power and whatever, you know, when you're younger, and then when you're older, you make up for your lack of that with your brains.
Yeah.
You know,
it keeps most of us humble.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, I don't know how much you could talk about, but you were away for a little bit.
Yeah. I spent, about 10 months away from the family on a deployment, and you know, it's one of the hardest things I've done is being away from the family. And so coming home obviously is a huge reunion. It's awesome being back with my children and my wife, and it's been great. It's been about 2 weeks now, and it seems like I can't shoot enough arrows or give enough hugs or,
yeah,
you know, the whole outdoors thing and the shooting bow and all that, something that I craved while I was gone, but nothing can hold a candle to being back with the family, that's for sure. Everything else outside of that really is details.
Yeah.
But there's always the anxiety when you come home, how you're going to, because you have to fit back in. It may be my home, it may be my family, but there's still the anxiety of how you fit back in with that again. And
right.
Each time, it's not any easier every time, but you have to subtly fit back in and not try to press your way into things. And because, you know, your family goes on with their life while you're gone, and you have to do the best you can to come in and not disrupt what they started and what they've done, and kind of try to find your way, your spot again. And happy to say, though, it's been amazing. My children, I honestly think all of us have a deeper connection now than before I left. It's just the time spent apart. I don't know how to explain it or what it did, but it's been awesome. I've been blessed.
Cool, man. That's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine. It's like every time you go, it's like different. It's like a whole new, you know, what you said, like trying to find your way in. That's gotta be tough. I mean, right. It's gotta, I mean, at 10 months, I mean, I go away for a week and I feel like I gotta come back and fit in, you know, yeah, to what's going on. So 10 months, that must be like, yeah.
Yeah.
That must be crazy.
It's difficult, but it's been good. So
So I have you on today to kind of, share some stories with us. So I'm going to ask you to kind of share your most memorable, your most outrageous, the hunt is to you that sticks out more than anything.
That is always a hard question. And I've been doing this, oh crap, I started bow hunting 29 years ago. So there's a lot of stories that go in there and a lot of huge learning curve, if you will, over the years. But to pick one, there's so many good ones, so many favorite ones, if you will, quote unquote favorite ones, because it seems like each time is one in its own. So it's really hard to pick just one. I can look at all the animals hanging on the wall here, and each one has such a unique story. To pick one and call it my favorite story is pretty t difficult. If I look at these animals and I look at the one animal that probably taught me the most, would have to be the bull elk I killed in Montana in 2012. I went out there in the summer, did some scouting, a lot of scouting over Google Earth, and this was before Onyx hit the scene, so I wasn't really on that, but Google Earth was a huge asset. And then the rollout maps, that's always tried and true, and I pinpointed an area that I wanted to hit and went in there day before season. I seen a astronomical size bull that, this is a unit that 300-inch bulls is a damn good bull.
Oh yeah.
So you go in there and you see anything above 300, it's pretty awesome. You see a 320, 330, and you're like, holy crap, there's a good bull in here. And when I first initially saw this bull, I thought, oh, he's got to be 360, 370, and that size bull is just unheard of in that area. It's a over-the-counter tag, public land, high pressure area. There's people everywhere in this unit. So the elk hunting can be good. One year it can be great, and next year it can be not so good, and you left scratching your head wondering why the heck I'm even here. But in 2012, it was something to behold, that's for sure. I saw that bull numerous times. I was out there the first trip for about a week. And the fourth day of the season, or third day of the season that evening, had a good buddy with me, and we called in a bull to him, and a really nice 5 point, I mean a big 5 point, coming in right to the calls, and his cows veered off and he went with them. But we didn't know if we'd find that bull, the big bull that we laid eyes on the day before season, and we were watching off across a basin several hundred yards away, and these elk just kept funneling up this basin. And at the end, there was all the bulls together, and he was there. And each time I seen him, I think he was a little bit bigger. But I didn't want to get my hopes up, and didn't want to speculate. And at that point, score is not it doesn't really matter at that point. He just knew he was big, right? And but on the fourth day, that morning, my best friend and I snuck into this meadow where I figured they would be after a long hike. We got in there. And then we're in the dark, and we're leaning up against a tree. I'm half asleep, trying to catch up on the sleep I wasn't getting during that hunt. And I heard a bull bugle, and it was getting close to legal shooting light. And we started working our way in there, and we started seeing cows out in this meadow, and we heard the bull, but we couldn't see him. And after I left through the trees, I see antlers start coming through about 120 yards out, and he cleared the trees, ripping bugles and just putting on a heck of a show. And it was the bull that we nicknamed Royal Flush is the name we come up with on him. And it was, I just couldn't believe my eyes. We watched him, he come out and he pushed his cows around that meadow, and I thought maybe they'd work our way, and they wouldn't. And had my buddy stay back with a decoy.
Sorry, buddy.
No,
That's
you're
my
good.
son. My son just jumped in. That's
Raptor.
your velociraptor? Okay, go show that to mommy.
Yeah, my kids are downstairs. They haven't busted up in here yet. But that bull, we split up. My buddy stayed back. I snuck ahead a little bit, and I had him cow call, and that bull ripped off a bugle, and he turned and started coming right in, and he was at 70 yards in closing. You know, he thought he missed a cow, and his cows were going out the meadow into the trees the opposite direction. And I had him convinced he left a cow back and he was coming. He was at 70, maybe getting to 65 yards, and it looked like it was going to happen. And I almost thought it was, this is way too easy, you know, especially a bull of this caliber. And I don't know what happened to this day. I don't know, but the cows up ahead of us, the wind was right and everything, so it wasn't us, but this cow started barking, and you know what happens, obviously everything comes unglued at that time, and elk are running everywhere.
Right.
And I watched him run across the meadow with his cows, and I thought that, honestly, I thought that was the last time I seen him. I don't know if it was a mountain lion, a lot of mountain lions in that area. It could have been a black bear, it could have been coyotes, who knows. But
yeah, right.
So the next several days, we spent a lot of time. But the really cool thing about this animal, it's not just your typical bull. He got to the end of the meadow. He stopped and turned around. I thought they were gone, you know, but I didn't realize he stopped at the end of the meadow before going in the trees and looked back, and he seen me stand up from behind some jack pines.
Oh.
And it was the first time he actually seen me and I seen him. And granted, he was 150 yards off or so, but that was the last time he ever bugled.
Oh.
And the only time we ever could find that bull, we'd do some still hunting, and he would growl. That's all he would do from that point on. He would never let out a bugle, and that's the only way I could ever find that bull, if I was lucky enough to be within range of him, is he would growl. But I went home, of course, that trip empty-handed, 8-hour drive back home, and I was there sitting in tree stands and trying to get a white tail or out stalking mule deer in South Dakota, and I was able to get back about a week later, middle part of September, when the rut should be amazing, right?
Right.
And excuse me. And I get back there and make the trip again. And what are the chances of finding a high pressure area? There's seen hunters a lot. And I just figured for sure with me bumping him that time might be the last time I seen him again.
Right.
But I decided to give it one last shot, and I was sitting up high on a ridge the first evening I got there, glassing out with a spotter, and I seen a glimpse of a bull walking through the trees above a cliff probably a half mile away, and I just could tell by the antler it was a good bull. I didn't know if it was him or not. And next day I slipped in there in the dark, and I was sitting there, and I heard a bull bugle off to my left up the ridge, and I thought, okay, well, that sounds like a decent bull. And I still didn't have verification that this bull was even in the area. I was out for anything at that point, really. A decent, respectable elk. You know, even 290, 280, I would have been plumb happy with. And so this bull bugled, and I started working my way that way. And I heard off to my right, down in the bottom, I heard that growl of Royal Flush. And so obviously I forgot about the elk that's been in a hurry and went after this other bull. And I spent 5 days with that bull, following him and his harem everywhere they went. I had 30 to 40 cows, depending on the day. He had a huge harem with him, and I spent 5 days just shadowing that harem. And, you know, any call I would try, it wouldn't work. So I just tried to penetrate his harem and try to get a shot, try to still hunt, follow him, try to get in front of them, keep the wind right. But wherever I ended up that day is where I'd bivvy for the night and pick them up the next morning when they're coming off their feed grounds. And I just didn't want to press it, because I knew
right.
If I did it one more time, he'd probably, who knows where he'd end up. And it was the last morning of the hunt. I had to get back to South Dakota and still hunting an area. I knew that they were down below me hitting their water in the morning before they come up high in the dark timber. And I could hear them moving through the trees and just trying to catch them. And but that was the same thing I tried the other 3 mornings, and I wasn't working for me. The thermals were right, or I just wasn't fast enough. So I thought, you know, let's try something unorthodox. And stuck the cow call, put my reed in my mouth, and I just started running at them. You know, elk aren't quiet creatures by any means, and made myself sound like a lost cow. And once I started seeing them good in the trees in front of me, I'd slow down a little bit, make sure they weren't watching me when I was walking. But I was able to slip right in on the end of his cows where he should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no bull. It was all cows. And I was standing there confused, and I heard a twig break, and I looked to my right, and here's that bull staring at me at about 35 yards.
Oh, shit.
I didn't even know he was there. He was coming. It's amazing how quiet they can be when they want to be.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that was his game. Maybe he was the one who ducked back, let his cows do his thing, and whatever it was, it worked for him that day. But I knew he would skirt around me to get to his cows, and long story short, he did is several minutes of stare down, and he come through an opening at 40 yards, and I was at full draw and settled the pin. And you know when you shoot and you seems like you can see every vein spinning and it's in slow motion? That's what it was. The shot was perfect, I thought. And I don't know, 10 yards before the arrow got to the bull, it hit a branch that I didn't see and deflected and just shaved a little bit of hair off the top of his back and stuck in the tree behind him.
Oh, God.
I'd be lying if I say I didn't throw up after that shot. But so that was it. You know, I had to get back to South Dakota, and that was, I had another chance at a world-class bull and bull of a lifetime, and I screwed it up, or a tree branch screwed it up, I should say. But you know, it was a long 8-hour drive home knowing that I missed that bull like that. And I was at home again, you know, back at work and sitting in the tree stands in the evening. Went out looking for mule deer that weekend, and I think I had 3 days left off of work, and I saved that for deer season. And I just had to go back one more time and look for the bull. So I did. And I got there, you know, 8 hours of driving again. I left at 3 a.m. after my little girl's birthday and got there about noon. And it was huge snowflakes, you know, like those dime-sized snowflakes that are falling straight down. There's no wind out. It's pristine, and it was just right. It felt right, and left the pickup. And my plan was to still hunt this huge basin where he had been in the past. But before I got there, I seen another area that looked good, so I stopped. And I got in there, and I started still hunting, and I bumped another bull that I knew was in the area, a nice 6x7, about a, I suppose he's a 340 bull, which I would have been plumb tickled with. At this time, you know, I'm out for a cow. But I got complacent. I wasn't patient. I was pushing myself, moving too fast, and I pretty much walked right up on him in his bed, and I should have killed that bull. And he took off, and I walked back to the pickup pretty disgruntled and got there. And now it was snowing to the point where I asked myself why I was even in the mountains. And drove to another area, and what it was is a huge basin, a couple avalanche chutes, and then up high there's a saddle between two peaks, but in that saddle the grass is fairly high. And my experience with these elk in that area, when it's got that wet heavy snow and it's dripping off the trees, they like to be out in the meadows. So that was the plan, was to still hunt through that again like I've done several times looking for this bull in the past, and work my way back down to that meadow towards later on in that afternoon and evening, and maybe elk out in that meadow. And it wasn't half mile from the pickup I come across a 6-point feeding out in a small meadow, and I was 32 yards from him, and all he had to do is clear one tree, and the wind was in my face, everything was great, snowing, it's awesome out, and had an arrow knocked, I was ready to go, tightening the string, and I still don't know, but he threw his head up and he turned and looked right at me, and he started barking, and I still, to this day, I don't know how he pinned me down. I was behind a big pine tree, but so I thought that was the end of the hunt. It was later in the afternoon, and so I still hunted up to where my arrow stuck in the tree after missing Royal Flush a week and a half prior to that, and I sat down. I had a granola bar. I might have even peed on that tree because I was still mad about that miss, but... I sat there for a little bit, and then I remembered, you know, you're not going to kill something if you're just upset and you're disgruntled and you're walking, tromping through the trees like a caveman and can't give up, you know, take it to the bottom of the ninth and never stop swinging. So I refocused and working my way, still hunting through the trees towards that high meadow and the saddle I was telling you about, and getting fairly close to that point, and I heard two bulls sparring. And thought, well, heck, you know, that's a good sign, right? Mm-hmm. It's a noise you can't forget. But so I kept still hunting, stalking closer to this meadow, and here's two raghorns out in the meadow and just sparring around. And I'm like, hey, raghorn, you know, I got today and tomorrow. I'm happy to take anything at this point. A cow walked out, and Because I did. I totally gave up on finding Royal Flush again. What are the chances? You know, it was 39 days after I first saw him, and I'm hunting. What are the chances of finding that bull again? And there's it was October 8th, and so Reghorn was looking pretty tasty. I could see that all over my plate at the dinner table. So I'm closing distance on these two Reghorns, and they're sparring around out in this meadow, and just out of the blue, they throw their head up and they look my direction and take off running out of the meadow. And I'm like, I just figured for sure, you know, it wasn't my year to kill an elk. And they got to the other end of the meadow, they stop, and they turn around and start walking back. So what would that tell you?
That you there's know, something else other than you.
Right. There's something right? else in that meadow. Mountain lion? Yeah, well, they're coming back, so it's not a mountain lion. Coyotes, they wouldn't have probably ran like that. And I'm like, there's got to be another bull in this meadow.
Right.
But it's October 8th, you know, what kind of rut stuff is still going on October 8th? But something made them run. And so I got a little bit more edgy and paying them a little bit more attention. And as they're walking back, I snuck ahead a little bit closer to the meadow. And I probably have 50 yards to the edge of the meadow, and the trees are starting to open up, and I start seeing some cows. And it's a saddle, remember, so you can't see the whole meadow. So the closer I get, the more I can see over the top, and I start seeing cows spread out in that meadow. And so then I'm like, there's got to be a better bull in here, because why else would they run away like that?
Yeah.
And I'm getting closer and sneaking ahead, and, you know, that snow made everything quiet. It's not crunchy snow. It's the wet snow, so the ground is silent. And here, I don't know, 35, 40 yards away, there's a big pine tree that had fell over sometime recently, so it had all the branches still, but
okay,
he lifted his head, and Royal Flush was there behind that tree 35 yards away.
Shit.
He was rubbing the tree, and
did your heart just freaking jump out of your chest?
You know, I just finished calming myself down after seeing the Reghorns, and then this happened, and it about sent me into overdrive. But he looked at those two Reghorns coming back, and he chased them. He took off after them, and he chased them across the meadow, which allowed me, I just kept an eye on the cows, and I pressed up to the very edge of the meadow behind another small jack pine, and I got there before he turned around. He turned around, and he was coming back with his cocky attitude, you know, walking, swaying his head, and he was still very much rutting on October 8th, which really surprised me. He had about 15 cows with him still, and two Reghorns that he wanted to chase the heck out of there. But yeah, he come back, had no idea I was there. I was behind that pine, and it seemed like forever from watching him walk, you know, 120 yards across that meadow. But I was at full draw when he cleared that shooting lane and smoked him quartering away shot as he went to his cows. He had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I still in disbelief that I even had a shot at that bull. And they went off the ridge on the other side, and I ran across the meadow, knocked another arrow, and I got over there, and I could see down below me in this deep, deep draw, and there's no trees other than to the left, and all of those cows, and now the Reghorns had even joined them, but the bull wasn't there. Royal Flush was nowhere in sight, and so I took a few more steps so I could see over that rise, and he was standing there still. He was hurting pretty bad.
Right.
So I put another arrow behind his shoulder, and he busted up into the trees, and you know, at that point, it was snowing really hard, and it was getting dark. I just decided, you know, I'm just going to leave him, come back in the morning. And I felt great about bull shots, but I didn't want to chance anything with a bull like that. So a lot of phone calls home to buddies that night, very little sleep, and I got in there the next morning at about 7 and retraced my steps, couldn't find either arrow, and went to where I last seen him go in the trees, and he wasn't 40 yards later. He was piled up right there.
Wow.
And I can't say the feeling, you know, looking at that bull. It was, you know, if you really respect the game, it's mm-hmm. when you see an animal laying motionless for the first time after spending that much time with him, getting to know that animal,
right?
And seeing him motionless for the first time, it was sad, really. You know, he was not as magnificent as he was the day before, all the other dozens of encounters I had with him. But don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
That went away fast, and I was pumped happy. But I still couldn't believe it. I was there on a solo trip in the backcountry and killed a bull of a lifetime. I'm sure it's my bull, 4.12 and 7.8. And but the thing that goes along with that more than anything is not the inches of antler, but the experiences that I had with that bull. You know, the memories that both my best friend and I still share to this day about that bull. He should have killed him a couple times. Didn't come together. And so, you know, of all of the hunting stories I have, that is probably, and the reason I go back to that one a lot is because no other animal has taught me what that animal has. And it's just amazing. These animals are amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very thankful I didn't go out there and kill him on the third or fourth day of season. And it took me 39 days from the first time seeing him to when I actually killed him. And, you know, I don't have facts and I never really looked it up. I have a little bit, but in 2012, I'd say he was probably the biggest over-the-counter public land free-range bull killed that year in 2012.
I would imagine, especially in Montana.
And, yeah, absolutely. If not one of the largest bulls, well, is the biggest bull killed in that area of all time. But it's amazing. A chance to see a bull like that in the wild and a chance to hunt a bull like that. I never thought with how I hunt, you know, buying the tags I do, that I would have that chance. But it goes to show you, you never know, you know, there's diamonds out there, right? You never know when you're going to pick up a shovel full of sand and find that one diamond. You just never know.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot of morals to the story in that hunt, but it's, what it comes down to a big time was patience, never give up, and you never know what's out there. You don't know what's going to come into your call. You don't know what you're going to stumble on over the next ridge. God works in amazing ways, and that's one of them, that it's just amazing how things come together sometime. And to this day, I still ask myself, why me, you know?
Yeah.
You
already answered your question before, man. It's patience, persistence. That's your favorite things, patience and persistence. I remember when I had you on the podcast before, that was your one of your main tips.
And you know that it definitely hinged on that. Hey, buddy. It definitely hinged on that. Patience and persistence plays a big part in almost any hunt. Some hunts, obviously, you go out and you kill an animal, you're like, wow, that was too easy. It should have been harder than that. But yeah, everything I think is based around that anymore.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So, but one thing that stuck out, because I was going to ask you a question, but I didn't want to interrupt your story, was when you were looking at Google Earth, how did you, what made, oh, that's the bull, huh?
Yeah, that's the bull.
Awesome. That's an awesome bull. I remember seeing the pictures when you posted it. What made you pick that spot to go hunt?
Well, it started in 2010. You know, 12 wasn't the first year I was there.
Oh, okay. So you had been there before. Okay.
I was in the area in 2010 and found some good numbers of bulls in there. But along with that, I also found high numbers of hunters as well, with a lot of pressure. But in 2010, it was really good. I should have killed a really good bull in 2010, several miles from that location. But it just didn't work out. Well, that area, it had burned up. So that's why I didn't go there in 12. But on Google Earth, I was looking for areas that, and this is generally how I do it for a lot of the hunting, is for elk, I was looking for good ridge tops. Dark timber on the top, water in the bottoms, good meadows with grass, secluded areas. And that was one of these, you know, it had a huge basin with six or seven really good ridges that came off the top, and dark timber, good water in the bottom, a lot of meadows. And, you know, when you see it, it looked elky on Google Earth. And that's what led me there. Did a lot of talking with biologists, find out what the herd was like, looked at the weather patterns the past couple of years and seen what the weather would be like, talked with several local ranchers that I could find phone numbers for, asking them what their grass was like in the mountains for the year because it's free free grazing up there.
Okay.
So there's cattle in that area too, and that's pretty tricky getting a hold of some of those landowners or ranchers that have free range cattle up there. And a lot of them are pretty tight-lipped, but luckily was able to get a hold of a couple really nice guys who kind of pinpointed a little bit of areas that had good grass for the year and started piecing it all together and that's kind of a needle in a haystack, I guess.
Yeah. Nah, cool, man. I'm always curious about how guys choose their spots. I think it's probably, for me anyway, it's the number one thing. What do you see in that area, you know, that makes you want to go there?
Right.
And I just it's kind of you know, and I try to adapt stuff into my own
Yeah.
skill set and try to, you know, pick it up from anybody and everybody. I'm always trying to learn something.
And
So, but
I've been back to that area several times since 2012, and it's, peaks and valleys, I guess. It hasn't been
yeah.
what it has been in the past. They're still out there, not the numbers of elk. Haven't seen any big bulls since that time, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm probably gonna try it again this year. It's a spot I go there and I cuss it some years and say I'm never coming back. This place is crap. But then in my mind, I'm like, I killed my bull of a lifetime here. There's still that opportunity. In 2012, who knows, he bred how many hundreds of cows, and
Yeah.
there's still got to be some of his genes running around that mountaintop somewhere.
Oh yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So
I'd
yeah, I'll
imagine.
be back there in September this year and see what I can find, see what I can dig up anyway.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go chase Rosies with Shannon Mobs in Oregon for elk hunting.
Right on.
And then I didn't draw anywhere else, so and I didn't I have a client here in Arizona during the rut, so I
Okay.
was like, eh, I'm probably not gonna go try an OTC tag anywhere to I'm not gonna be able to go during the rut. But I did pick up an Idaho tag. I'm gonna go with my rifle with me and Chad Roberts are gonna run out there in October, mid-October and see.
Good deal.
So yeah, I'll get to chase bulls around a little bit this year. Not
It's trying to play catch up with what I missed last fall, but
Yeah.
it have an opportunity to go out still this spring for bear out in Montana with some of the Onyx guys up there, but not sure I'm going to make that trip. There's a lot of other stuff I need to catch up on before I go out chasing bears around. But
Yeah. I'm sure
and
that
then
the wife of doesn't really want you leaving again since you just got back.
here's the cool part though. She wants me to go. She never has slowed down my want to hunt.
Right.
She has never intervened with it. I look around and this place is like a zoo. There's mountains everywhere, but she wants more.
Yeah. Nice.
She enables my addiction for sure. She helps with being an alcoholic, if you will.
Cool.
So I have that on my side. It's just now it's the time and the money.
Yeah.
But the fall looks like it's going to be pretty full. Speak goats in August in South Dakota. I drew a North Dakota any deer archery tag. Haven't been up there since 2012, I think. I killed a good whitetail up there. I'll be
Yeah.
chasing mule deer up there and then back to Montana for elk, Montana for mule deer, and then various tags here in South Dakota for deer. So it should be
Yeah, I'll
good.
be in South Dakota this year too.
Yeah.
I'll be there November.
Yeah. Let me know when you're coming through. Here we go.
Yeah. Gonna be up by Wall.
Okay. Yeah. Great area. Big bucks up in that area for sure.
Yeah, I was there last year. One of my friends is a rancher out there, and you know, we've been toying around with the idea of you know, running a couple hunts off of it in November. Nothing crazy because he runs cattle and whatnot. Last year I took a couple guys out and then I hunted myself. We shot a 172 muley and then a one, like 135 whitetail buck, and then I shot my buck too. I didn't have him scored, but he's probably mid 150s. He's a 4x2.
Nice
Yeah,
freak.
he's yeah, super tall, cool looking buck. I only had 3 days to hunt myself, so I wasn't being super picky.
Hey, you just spiked something in my mind. You say a 4x2, right? One thing I have found over the years, I used to be very greedy when I was out there. I used to look for the highest scoring animal, the one with the best rack, or the I've also found, talking about old age, getting older, is I'm more about the mature animals now than I used to be. If I take a young buck or a bull with a great set of antlers, and I take an older buck with a goofy set of antlers, it seems like I'm kind of drawn towards those more anymore. And it used to be the other way around. I used to be so focused on the score, right? And now it's more about that mature animal than anything. Yeah. I think it's harder to find a more mature animal than it is a higher scoring animal anymore
No,
in some
I've
areas.
always been, I like character. I definitely like
Absolutely.
character. I definitely always, not always, there was a short stint there, probably early 2000s, I'd say from like 2004 to maybe 2008, maybe even a little earlier than that, where I was just like, it's got to be Pope and Young or I'm not even thinking about it, And I think I was more like just trying to keep up with the Joneses type, and it really wasn't me. And I started like, that's when my hunting got a lot better. Like when I started like just, hey, if it makes me happy, I'm gonna shoot it. That's if that buck interests me or that bull interests me, that and I'm just gonna that's what I'm gonna go for. It's not I stopped thinking about inches way, probably now 10 years at least. And man, my hunting is one, I've gotten a lot more successful. And that's just because there's more opportunity than if you're, but part of it. But it, I don't put so much pressure on myself and I just enjoy the hunt,
I'm right there with you. But
Yeah.
yeah, I've killed a lot of good animals, and now that my kids are getting older, it's my dad, he's the one who taught me to hunt. Obviously, he's not with us any longer, but he was he was my hero, right? And I watched him on hunts when we go on hunts together, and he'd have an opportunity at this animal, and he would say, "Nope, I don't want him. You take him, son. You do it." And I'm like, "No, why? This is hunting. This is what it's about. Kill an animal, Dad. Do it." He's like, "No, I want you to do it." And I'm like, "What the heck? I never understood that." And now, being a father, I realize all the things he was teaching me when I wasn't knowing he was actually teaching me. And I'll probably go into semi-retirement when my kids start hunting. They're young, they're 7 and 8. So they got a few years. They start hunting turkey in the South Dakota when they're 10, but by the time they're 12, I think my hunting obviously will take a back seat, and I'll semi-retire, and it's gonna be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I am too. Like my two oldest girls, Olivia's my middle child. I don't think she'll really want to go because I've taken her a couple times. She had some interest in it, like I've taken them coyote hunting and stuff like that, where I knew they would see some action. And then I, but I think Ella. She's ready this year on her birthday, so in August she's going to do the hunter safety course, so she could start
Nice.
hunting. She has some interest, and she's actually a pretty good. She's a really good shot with the rifle, and she's fairly good already with the bow. She was a lot better, but then I don't know. It's probably my fault more than anything. I didn't stay on it. Every time they started not showing a little interest, I got discouraged. So I wasn't
Yeah.
like, I didn't want to push them, but I don't know if I like, I don't think I did a good enough job of motivating them.
Yeah,
But so,
it's
and
a
my
hard.
son's too young. He's only 2 years old. So we'll see what happens with him.
It's hard. There's a fine line there between breaking a child of wanting to do it or enabling them to want to do it. We went out and shot bow yesterday. The kids wanted to shoot, and I set up my new bow, and we went out and shot. And my son, he's right there next to me, flinging arrows and having a great time. And my daughter's kind of hanging back, and she kind of wanted to shoot, but then she didn't want to shoot. And It's very important not to pressure them to make
Right.
it feel like they have to do it. And but there, there's days where that's all she wants to do, and just say, yesterday wasn't one of them. And whatever she decides to do as a father, I'll be there to support her every step of the way. But obviously, I sure hope that they follow in my footsteps, but they also got to be their individual at the same time. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, I definitely don't want any of my kids to follow my footsteps, but I would like them to have some of the same interests as me so we can do it together.
Touche.
But 'cause I don't want them to go down this rabbit hole of being in the hunting industry.
Right.
Because they'll be broke their whole lives if they do that.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how there's so many people out there that think being in the hunting industry is where it's at, and that's where they make the money. And so many of these new guys focused on, oh, TV show, I got to be have a TV show, I got to be part of a TV show, I got to do this, I got to do that. And you're like, put the Kool-Aid down. That's not what it's. If you're in it just for that, you're doing it for all the wrong reasons.
I got into it and so it would give me an excuse to go hunting more. I mean, really, that's what I did. I wanted to be able to justify the amount of time and money I spent out hunting.
Absolutely.
And that, honestly, that's what it's become. It's still that. I mean, that's how I justify it to my wife.
Yeah. Hey,
I mean, she
it's working.
knows deep down inside if I don't do it, I'm going to go insane. But I
It's
mean, the
working
reality
for you.
is, yeah. But no, I tell guys all the time, oh, I mean, if I told you how many times I get approached and asked questions, oh, hey, how do you get in? Especially when hunting TV was a little bit more popular. I mean, that started kind of tapering off about 2, 3 years ago, but I would every day, five questions on social media, messages. Hey, how can I do this? How can I do that? And I'm like, listen, you really want to hunt? If you're doing this because you want to hunt a lot, get a job that affords you a lot of time off, and you make a lot of money. I said that. I mean, or start a business like I did. I started a business. I do swimming pools. My off season, I mean, we really don't have much of an off season in Arizona, but my off season is the fall and the winter. So I can, I it's easy for me to leave during those times to go hunting where I don't feel like I'm leaving anything on the table. And then freaking spring and summer, I'm busting my ass. But and so I don't hunt spring hunts very often. Here and there, I'll squeeze one in. But come fall and winter, I'm gone. I'm gone a lot, and I can run my business from out in the field. I make a decent living. I mean, I'm no millionaire by any means. I make a decent living, and I can do what I want to do. And I guess that, and I'm always trying to hit home with people. I'm like, if you want to do a lot of hunting, you want to hunt like I hunt, this is what you need to do. Because honestly, if I got rid of all the hunting industry stuff that I do, all the writing, the blog, the podcast, when I got rid of the TV show thing, I don't do that anymore. I still produce a couple films here and there, but if I get rid of all these things that I got all these hats that I wear in my hands and all these things, I could probably hunt another 50 days a year. And not to mention, if I took half the time that I spend in doing this and applied it to my business that actually makes me a lot of money, I'd be making 3 times the amount of money and I could go away even more. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, yeah, do not strive for, the hunting industry is, if you do it because you like now it's a lot of it's because I love it. I love, and if I'm being honest with myself, I enjoy being in the spotlight a little bit. I mean, I'm not no freaking celebrity, but I have recognition.
Who
But
doesn't enjoy it, you know?
yeah, but I enjoy producing the content that I produce. I enjoy doing this podcast. I enjoy writing. I enjoy photography and filming and all that stuff. So, that's what keeps me in it more than anything. So.
Absolutely. If everything was to go away tomorrow, guys like you and I would still be hunting. Unfortunately, that can't be said about a lot of those in the hunting community nowadays. If they're not getting the limelight,
yeah,
then they might not do it anymore.
Right.
And it's sad to see some of that coming this way, but hey, times are changing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's going to be some drastic changes in the next 10 years within the hunting industry. And I'm hoping some positive changes in the hunting community. I hope it becomes more of a community again, like it was in the 80s, because it's really not. It's something I kind of been fighting for, but I feel like I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, because the only people that are listening to me are the people that are like-minded. Everybody else is like, fuck yourself. You know, I don't want more hunters. I don't want to, I don't want to engage. It's just,
Well, cool, focusing and realize we're all hunters in one way, shape or form, and supporting each other is very important. And no bashing, that's, if that'll ever go away, but
shoot. Hit the nail on the head, man.
Yeah. Haters going to hate, like they say, but
yeah,
it's too bad when you take hunters hating hunters now. And we really need to focus on what's really at hand. It's not hunters versus hunters. It's those darn anti-hunters versus us. And I think more people in the hunting community would realize that and just band together as one big mass rather than fight amongst each other would be a lot nicer to see. That's for sure. But
the anti-hunters don't fight between themselves.
Yeah.
They're very organized and
exactly.
They all have their own little niche. This guy's fighting for the polar bears. This guy's fighting for the emus. But I guarantee you, they'll come together and have coffee and fight you.
Yeah.
It
blows my mind. The emails now this turned into an anti-hunters bash, but why not? Right. It blows my mind. The messages I'll get, or the messages others will get about, oh, you killed this animal, I'm going to kill your family. And
yeah. Oh, I get that all the time, man. Well, it's been a while since I got a real threatening one, but I've gotten a few doozies of, I'm going to cut your head off and kill your children. And fuck, I'm like, yeah, man. Okay, cool. You're a loving, peaceful person and you want, to stop, animals from dying, but you're going to kill me and my children. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing.
So, well, cool. So, you got any like extraordinary hunts coming up, or just the OFTC stuff?
I wouldn't label anything extraordinary by any means. Any of them have a opportunity to turn.
Obviously, you shot
extraordinary.
One.
Hunt, but, I'm sticking closer to home this year, so I can hunt with the family more. The Montana elk tag would probably be the farthest away I'll go hunting this year.
Cool.
Building points elsewhere, of course. Just doing what I love and being with my family the most I can, and catching up on lost times and building upon the memories that are already there. And I'm looking forward to it.
Nice.
It'll be a good ride for sure.
So I forgot. We have talked about this before, but in my brain, I cannot remember. Where in South Dakota are you?
I'm in by Rapid City. It's on the western side. Over by the Black Hills there.
Okay. That's usually where.
In South Dakota, there's a huge battle. There's West River and East River.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want to live on East River. West River is where it's at.
Yeah. When you're on the east side of the river, you're a Midwesterner. When you're on the west, you're a Westerner. Yeah. Everybody, South Dakota is where the West meets the east meets the West.
It should have always been East Dakota and West Dakota. I don't know why they did North and South. They could have split it by the river and been done with it, and then you would have had a kick-ass West Dakota and a not-so-good East Dakota. But
I don't know. There's some pretty big bucks in East Dakota.
There is. Yeah, those
whitetails and freaking cornfields over there get some giants.
Those croplands, they grow those animals big over there for sure.
I gave it a crack there once, but I took a kid from he was diagnosed with cancer, so he was on the list for a hunt of a lifetime, and I took him with an outfitter that was willing to donate So I took him hunting there. We had a freaking miserable time, but I did see one really big buck. And that was the only deer I had seen the whole trip. But I mean, it was I felt so bad because here's this kid who wanted to go somewhere and he wanted to go someplace exciting and new and actually have an opportunity to shoot a big deer. And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. South Dakota. But I had been in South Dakota, but I was always had been in the Black Hills. But I always had heard about the big bucks on the East. We had shitty weather, and then on top of it, the guy was really a pheasant guide, and he just started getting into the deer stuff. So the stands, none of them were in good places. Hell, I fell out of my stand, or my stand fell apart as I was getting into it. It was a big ladder stand, and the ladders fell out from underneath me. I'm hanging. There was no rope to tow my bow, so I was going up with the bow in my hand, and I'm just hanging for like 16 feet up, and I'm like, I gotta drop my bow to pull myself up, or jump down with the bow in my hand. And I'm like, well, I'm only 16 feet up, and I'm hanging, 6 feet down already. My feet are, I don't know, like 10 feet. I could do this, man. I hurt for like a week after that. And yeah, it was shitty.
You almost became a statistic.
It was really bad. I mean, some of the freaking stands were like less than 10 feet up, but I'm like, dude, I'm like eye level with the freaking deer. Like that, I might as well just go out there and spot and stalk, still hunt. So when I finally saw that big buck that I was talking about, I told the guy, I said, listen, just give me a hang on. And I'll go find a spot. And I found a spot in this bottom, threw a stand up in a tree, and sure enough, I picked a good spot, and a big buck came across this creek. I found a creek crossing is what it was. And I couldn't get up high enough in this tree, but I thought I was high enough, and I got and he was coming, then he came down across the creek, and I think he caught me moving to turn the camera on, and he just turned around and walked back up the way he came. I mean, he didn't like bust or anything. I was like, oh, son of a bitch, the one opportunity, and I freaking screwed it up. But
You
anyway.
say the one opportunity. That's the other thing. Every hunt you go on, it seems like no matter the hunt, you always have an opportunity. It's whether you capitalize it on it or not. You have that one chance. A lot of them is always one chance.
I think that could be said, and I hope this doesn't come off as conceited or for, guys like you and me. But there's a lot of people that go out there that go out and they never even see anything. I just literally I just had a conversation with a guy at the gym this morning, and he said to me, he's like, I've never even seen a deer out in the desert. And I'm like, oh man, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, that sucks because there's a shit ton of deer. Hey, bud.
You say hi. That's Jackson.
So yeah, and I was like, oh man. But I get that a lot from people. I feel like there's a lot of guys, and then and some of them might be just be new hunters or whatever, but I think there's a lot of people that go out there and have a really, really, really not so good experience, and they don't
But
get those opportunities.
it always leaves you wondering too what they're doing when they're out there.
Yeah, well, that's just it,
Yeah, you want to say hi?
The
All
grunt high.
right. Talk to you in a bit.
Anyway, well, cool, man. I'm gonna let you go, get back to those kids, and thanks for coming on, sharing that story. That bull's amazing.
Well, I
You gotta
appreciate it.
send me a picture of it so I can post it with the episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime you want to chat, let me know. I've got plenty of stories for you.
Yeah. For sure.
All righty, John.
All right, take it easy.
Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts and the Tuesday Kuzday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.